Welcome to Lawmen, a podcast about local legends and obscure curiosities from days of yore. I'm James Shakeshaft.
And I'm Alistair Beckett King. Coming at you.
Well, Alistair, I hope you're coming at me like a big, scary ghost dog.
How did you know? That's exactly how I'm approaching.
Well, that's the subject of this week's tale.
Ooh.
It's a big, scary ghost dog from the county of Devon and Dorset.
Convenient.
Yes.
It would be both.
Yes. I do have, in the past, I have had difficulty telling them apart. This is the black dog of Devon / Dorset.
Oh. That's the howl of a dog who's not quite sure where he is, boundary-wise.
You can't tell. Hey there, Alistair.
Hi, James.
How are you doing?
I'm well, thank you. Thanks for saying hello in a really hip 90s way.
Hey.
Hey there.
I feel like a benevolent teacher today.
How are you hanging, James?
Oh, great, dude. After your recent episodes where you'd clearly done a lot of research and effort, I've done a lot of research for this story.
Have you been shamed into doing research, James?
I have a little bit, yeah. And also, it was the Oscars at the time of recording, just the other day. I don't know if you noticed, Alistair, this is going to date the episode, obviously, Oscars 2024. Christopher Nolan won Best Director.
Did he? I mean,
yeah.
Good for him. I mean, no, I don't accept it. He isn't. Sorry, haven't seen the film. Not bothered.
It's inspired me.
No!
To...
No! Who else was nominated? Couldn't Yorgos Lanthimos, what's his name? Couldn't you have just... No, that would be less appropriate now that I think about it.
Well, Alistair, I'm going to start with a flash forward, and then we're going to do a bit of time stuff. We're going to jump back.
Okay, but if okay. It's the start, how can it be a flash forward?
That's a good point. Maybe I'm just going to do something reasonably modern day at the start, and then I'm going to record scratch and go, how did we get here? Like every Christopher Nolan film does.
As far back as I can remember, I always wanted to be Oppenheimer. Freeze frame. And then it goes back, doesn't it?
Or just like the bomb going off and he's got the sunglasses on and his hair gets blown back. He goes, I bet you're wondering how I got here. Yes. Okay. So are you ready?
It would have been better to say, as far as I can remember, I always wanted to be Death, a Destroyer of Worlds. Really. That would have been the smart reference. But never mind.
As far back as I... can remember, I always wanted to become Death, the Destroyer of the Year, so on. Yes, okay, good. It's good that we workshopped it, though, before
yeah,
recording.
I'm very happy with where that ended up.
Yes. Alistair, this is going to be what passes for modern times in the World of Lawmen podcast. It's 1959.
Ooh, the swinging late 50s.
Yes, we're in a coastal town, almost coastal town. You can sort of smell the sea in the air and occasionally...
Very coastal.
Yes. Twixt a dip in the hills, you'd say, I can see the sea and the sea can see me.
Mm.
That's what you say. There's a young couple and their 10-year-old son, and they're staying at a hotel in a little town called Uplime. And they've had dinner and they're going out for a little walk down a little lane called Hay Lane. And as they walk past, the camera sort of zooms in on the road sign saying Hay Lane. And then it falls down and reveals that it now says Dog Lane. I know that's not really how street signs work. They don't just put a new one over the old one. But for the purposes of this...
No, they would replace it altogether. Is it because Hay Lane was a bit too 90s?
Too 50s.
Yeah, it's quite 50.
Oh, is it? Hey, yeah. As in hey, dude.
I just like the way you started the podcast.
My introduction, yeah.
Introduction, I'm sorry. I knew the answer, really. I was just being silly, James.
It's a good bit of silliness, actually. But on this lane, Hay Lane, there are hedges.
Dog Lane.
Well, a.k.a. Dog Lane. There are hedges on both sides, tall hedges. And as the family walk along, they suddenly stop because from one hedge emerges a black dog which floats past at eye level.
Ooh, at eye level?
Yes.
It's not the height a dog would normally be.
From one hedge to another, and it disappears silently into the other one.
What kind of speed are we talking?
Float speed.
Standard float speed.
Standard float speed, which I guess is quite... It's slow, isn't it? Nothing floats fast.
SFS, standard float speed.
Exactly right.
So it's not a dog jumping from one hedge to the other?
No, it's floating at eye level, presumably to the adults. Because a dog being at eye level to a child is that standard dog.
That's standard.
And now the family are shocked. They're gasping. They're, and the camera pans round to the hotel that they've just walked out, and it's called
Floating Dog Hotel. Is it called that?
No, it's called the Black Dog Inn, but that is a better name.
That is better actually, because that sounds more like the name of a hotel. If you wouldn't stay at a place called Floating Dog Hotel. You were like, how did they get that name?
I don't know. Go down that lane. Don't touch the road sign. It's loose. The paint's still wet. So, Alistair, yes, we're in Uplime. We're flashing back now. We are, geographically, right on the border of Devon and Dorset. I want it to be known that this tale justifies my county blindness.
James, nobody ever argued that they weren't near each other. Let's be clear about that. But we're on the very cusp twixt Dorset and next Dorset.
Yes, according to Devon Ghosts by Theo Brown. This is a great book. It's 1982. I'm going to pop my camera on to show you the cover because it's one of the best covers for these sort of spooky books that I've seen. Can you see that?
Oh, yes. I mean, there's a little bit of crackle going on, but I can see a figure, glowing beam. Is that a ghost emerging from the darkness of a woods?
It's kind of like he's sort of looking over his shoulder. It looks like a man startled in the woods looking over his shoulder. You know, is he the ghost or is he the haunter or the hauntee?
Great question. But because you can't see his hands, it's possible that he's just looking at his phone.
Yeah, because there's a sort of unearthly light about him.
Yeah, that might explain the unearthly glow.
Yes. So I got put onto this from friend of the show, Lore of the Land, and that referred me to the work of Theo Brown, who she was a folklorist who collected lots of stuff from the South Coast. One of her books is Devon Ghosts, which features the story of the black dog of Uplime.
So is Theo short for Theodora?
I'm guessing so, yes. She's an honorary research fellow in the Department of Theology at Exeter University. That's just a little fact. She says, the black dog story is often claimed for Dorset as the boundary runs past the pub, but actually the building stands in Devon. What building's that, Alistair?
Is it the Floating Dog Inn?
It is now, or in the 50s. It's now a B&B with some very good reviews and some bad ones. But I don't... We don't need to go into that.
Hey, James, look. Even our podcast gets some bad reviews.
I know.
Some people are just evil. Some people are just bad people.
Some people are simply wrong.
Yep, that's what it is. Some people are all just awful, bad, wrong people. And they listen to a couple of pals getting their friend Chris Cantrell onto the show just to help him out.
Yep. They listen to four-fifths of an episode.
They listen to most of the episode. They listen. They put up with 30 minutes of Chris Cantrell, and then they flip out and give a low review. Understandably, really, actually, I've talked myself into sympathising with them.
Yeah, I'm more on their side now as well. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I do see that point.
But let's get back to Devon or Dorset.
Yes.
To the Black Dog Inn. Now we're currently a B&B/tea rooms, but back. Then in the 50s, it was a pub called the Black Dog Inn.
You do want to be clearly pausing between dog and inn, James.
Yes, yes. Very good point. Going down a lane and some floating dog inn.
Quite. Let's not get silly here.
No. Let's go back to the 1600s when such a thing was a thing of the future.
Yeah, people didn't even have cars then.
So in the late 1600s, early 1700s, this was a farmhouse. Actually, I'm not too sure what the year is that this happened, to be honest. Okay, it's just before 1959 and before they had, like, telly and stuff.
Okay, so at any time
It's post
1959.
It's definitely after the Civil War. I think it's probably the 1800s. Is a farmhouse, and now back definitely before the Civil War, that used to be this farmhouse used to be a wing of a mansion that was destroyed during the Civil War, and just a little bit was left, and that was turned into a farmhouse. Lots of farmers came and went in that farmhouse. One of the features of the farmhouse, because it had been a mansion, was that it had a very impressive hearth. Now, a hearth is, for any of our more modern listeners, it's a big fireplace, basically, with a big chimney, and you can sit round it like you imagine people did in the past before they had, you know, telly and Twitter and that.
Mm-hmm. Just staring into the flames.
Yes. And that's what a farmer did who lived there. He'd every evening, he'd go and sit in his big comfy chair on one side of the hearth. And then one night appeared a big black dog. And it went over and sat in the other big chair on the other side of the hearth. And the farmer didn't do anything about it.
It climbed into the chair?
Yeah.
On the furniture?
The other... Yes.
I can't see a farmer of roughly the 18th or 19th century putting up with that sort of behaviour from a dog.
And then the next night he came and sat in his big chair again. And the next night the dog appeared again and sat in the chair. And this went on for weeks and weeks, months and months.
Can I ask you one question about this, James?
Yes.
Did that farmer have a dog?
No.
Okay, that changes how spooky that is a lot.
This was a phantom dog. Now, and as I say, according to English Fairy and Other Folk Tales by Edwin Sidney, it went on for months, and it at first cast a gloom over his evening, but he grew accustomed to it. And his neighbours knew about this. He must have mentioned it, you know, as you do in the pub when you go like, oh, you know what it is when a big spectral black dog comes and sits in your in one of your chairs in your living room, guys? And they'd be like, no, that doesn't happen. Doesn't happen so much.
High five. Don't leave me hanging here. But they left him hanging.
Yeah, they did leave him hanging. And some of them thought it was a bit weird. And they thought it was perhaps potentially a demon or some sort of devil dog. But he was like, he was all right with it, you know. So, and his neighbours urged him to get rid of the dog.
Mm.
Get rid of this demon dog that comes into your house literally every single night for months and months. And he said, the farmer said, why should I? He costs me nothing. He eats nothing, drinks nothing. He interferes with no one. He's the quietest and frugalest member of the house.
Wow, burn on everyone else in the house.
Yeah.
Ouch.
Yeah. And then some of these people down the pub started to take the mickey out of him. And not for what you'd think the reason being like, oh, you think you've got a ghost in your house. You're a silly person for saying things like that. Stop talking about your imaginary dog. People were taking the mickey out of him. They called him Chicken. They said he was too afraid to chase the dog out of the house.
Too afraid to confront the dog.
Yes, they Marty McFly'd him.
Oh, he would hate that.
Exactly.
Marty McFly would.
Back to the Future 2 and onwards. Not mentioned in the first film.
He doesn't seem that bothered about it in the first film.
Yeah, it doesn't come up. But yeah, they successfully Marty McFly'd him because he was like, right, nobody calls me Chicken for not chasing away a big black spectral ghost dog that comes in my house every night. And he probably had a couple of beers because he came home from the pub.
Dutch courage, they call it, don't they?
Yes, they do.
Is that because you're at a weird angle? Just a little joke for anybody who went to film school there.
That's very good, yes.
A clever little joke. Not funny, but I think we all appreciated it.
Gives you the courage to walk up what was a level street but now seems like a slope.
Yeah.
I guess is how it would work. So he gets home from the pub. The dog's already there in the chair. And the guy snatches up a poker from the fire and lashes out at the dog. Which runs away. Come here, you. Come here, dog. And the dog runs upstairs and he chases it. It gets all the way up into the attic before the ghost dog evidently remembered the fact that it was a ghost and jumped through the ceiling.
Yep, that is the way of the samurai.
Just as he's swinging at it with his poker and he smashes into a bit of the panelling, bit of the plaster in the roof, and out falls a box of gold and silver coins.
Ooh.
At the exact spot the dog jumped out. A big chest full of gold and silver.
This is almost the second time a dog has led someone to find a big trove of gold in their attic on our podcast.
This is a little cleaner than the other time, because I think that...
Well, the last time it was inside the body of a dog, which was horrible.
Someone just was poking around in their ceiling and then a dog corpse fell on them.
Yeah.
The silver lining being that the dog was lined with silver and gold.
Mm.
In this case, a ghost dog jumps through the ceiling and just a standard normal box full of gold and silver from the time of Charles I falls out. So presumably this was in the mansion when it was still a mansion before it was a farmhouse. They hid some of the stuff up in there.
Pre-Civil War.
Yes. And the guy, the farmer, took the money and he turned his farm into a pub and he called it the Black Dog Inn.
So the dog was actually a good member of the team, really.
Kind of, yeah. And I don't know if you know this, but in the sort of 70s and 80s, when a footballer would retire, or the 60s and 70s, when a footballer would retire, they'd open a pub. And maybe this is kind of like the farmer just living that dream, like, oh, I've got a load of money, what shall I do? I think I'm going to open a pub.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
No, oh, that was a big thing. That was a big thing. Now they become pundits and, I don't know, get massive documentaries on Netflix and stuff about them. But yeah, there's the Black Dog Inn on Dog Lane, which, as we know now, is now called Hayes Lane. And yes, this lucky farmer became a landlord. And in according to my sources, Law of the Land, Devon Ghosts, the first instance of this story is from 1866 in Larwood and Hotton's History of Signboards, because the sign on the pub pictured the dog, I quote, in all its spectral frightfulness.
Ooh.
Yeah.
So the pub had a ghost dog on the picture?
Yes. Yeah. By 1866, it definitely did. And the lucky farmer became a landlord with his pub, the Black Dog Inn. But what, Alistair, became of the ghost dog? Well, if you were to go to the pub now, you first of all, you'd be disappointed because it's a B&B in tea rooms.
I wouldn't be disappointed. I love a tea rooms.
Well, you'd be pleased to see it's a B&B in tea room.
Yes, get
and,
in.
You'd be disappointed to see the original building has now been knocked down and it's a different building now to what it was originally. So you wouldn't even be able to sit by the fire of a nighttime and await that dog. That would be a fool's errand. Don't expect that dog to come nuzzle you while you're inside. It never appeared in the building again. Presumably unsurprisingly, because the last time it was there got chased out by a man with a poker. But it is said to haunt the lane behind Dog Lane, now Hayes Lane. It is also said to cross the county boundary at midnight, dragging a rattling chain, because the Hayes Lane, Dog Lane is on the boundary of your friend of mine, Dorset, and next Dorset, Devon.
Yeah, and dogs famously pay no regard to administrative boundaries. They're like you, James. That dog has no idea where he is politically.
I don't know why. I don't know if it's because I've muttered about this within earshot of my phone that many times, but I got served a story today about how the change of Berkshire and Oxfordshire county boundaries in 1974 or 72 was a real big thing and everyone was really annoyed about it.
So, do you think there's a profile somewhere out there with Facebook or Cambridge Analytica that has you down as
yes.
doesn't know where county boundaries are? Interested in stories related to confusion around county boundaries.
Yes, maybe. Yes, I think it is.
Yeah, I guess that's the only explanation.
It was a very interesting article that I did read.
Well, you would say that if you could make any sense
of it.
Well,
do you know what? The county line of Berkshire and Oxfordshire was almost right through the centre of Oxford.
What? Now, no,
it's the East Berlin of its day.
What? I'm entirely on your side, James. I mean, I've been sceptical initially. That's absurd.
I know. The Uffington White Horse used to be in Berks. So there was a big shake-up of counties in 1972. I think it was put through in 1972, but it actually happened in 1974. And a lot of our books slash pamphs are from the early to mid-70s when these county lines were blurred.
Not the only lines that were different in the 70s.
Yes. Good point.
I'm doing a serious face.
No, that's a good serious face and quite right.
Hold on a minute, James. Are you saying that because we don't really know where the county boundaries were, maybe everything you've said wrong in the past was actually right in those days?
Maybe. Yes.
Maybe Hastings was in Kent back then.
Well, that one's... No, right, that probably was definitely that wrong. That one was definitely wrong. MysteriousBritain.co.uk also repeats the story and adds that a phantom coach driven by four horses can also be seen there. And there's a comment from Ian Topham, potentially pronounced Ian Topham, but I'm going with Topham.
Topham, not Topham.
No. not Topham.
I'd say Topham.
I'd say Topham.
You'll have Ian hopping all over you if you get this wrong.
He cites the 1866 history of signboards and that there was a sighting in 1856 by a lady who was walking with her husband and she became aware of a dog walking close to her, giving off a cold, dank feel. She looked and she saw a black, shaggy dog with fiery eyes. And here is a eyewitness testimony. I think this was collected by Edwin Sidney, as mentioned earlier. I saw an animal about the size of a dog meeting us within 2 or 3 yards, the size of a young calf. And it passed by. I could not help turning him round to look after him, and I saw him growing bigger and bigger as he went along, till he was as high as the trees by the roadside, and then seeming to swell into a large cloud, he vanished into the air.
Wow. Are we 100% sure the dog wasn't moving towards her?
Just getting bigger and bigger.
That might explain it getting bigger and bigger.
Yeah, that is standard perspective, isn't it?
Mm.
Well, Alistair, in this case, why don't you ask the husband who is with her?
Okay, put him on.
All right, mate.
How you doing?
I'm from the past. I'm quite confused, if I'm honest.
Don't worry about it. Just a few questions. Can you get you a cup of coffee or a cigarette, anything like that?
I don't know. Do I know what either of those things are? Well, 1800s, yeah, I probably would know what those things were.
You probably would know. Well, don't get used to them, because I'm about to slap them out of your hands and go bad cop on you.
Oh, no.
What did you see? Tell me.
I saw nothing at all. All I saw was a bit of vapour coming from the sea.
Are you calling your own wife a liar?
No, I'm not. I wasn't interviewed originally this far, so this is where this is where the recreation breaks down.
Right, okay, yeah.
It's like that bit in the Holodeck. Realistic
simulation, but yeah, you had to become self-aware towards the end there.
It's like where when Data's on the Holodeck and he makes himself a stand-up comedian. You remember that one?
Of course. You and I talk about it about once a month.
We do, actually, yes.
Yeah. We both watched that when we were teenagers and thought, I could do that if a robot can do it.
Yeah, if Data can do it, and he's not funny. The other guy, Kane, what was his brother called?
Law.
Law.
As in lawmen, but we're more data men, really.
Whoa, I never realised that.
Yeah. I thought you meant Joe Piscopo.
Joe Pasquale. It's pronounced Pasquale.
Joe Pasquale was not in TNG.
It was in the original series.
This is the hill I'll die on. Joe Piscopo was in that episode of Star Trek The Next Generation.
Oh, was he?
He played the comedian.
Oh. Right. So, yes. That is the eyewitness testimony from that lady in 1856.
Incredible.
You're right. She either saw the dog coming towards her, getting bigger and bigger.
A bit confused.
And then suddenly vanishing. Or maybe she saw a dog-shaped balloon.
Either way, how do we explain her husband seeing nothing? A baffling mystery.
He just saw some vapour coming from the sea.
That is the home of vapour.
Mm-hmm. So that, Alistair, is the story of the black dog of Devon/Dorset.
What a story, James.
Yeah.
Very spooky little boy.
Yes.
Very spooky papa.
Yes. I know, yeah, so it was seen as recently as 1959, because that was when the bit started at the beginning, remember?
Going,
the cold open.
I'm trying to do a dog hovering in audio form.
It would be confused and scared, I think. But that might, I mean, I am leaning more and more towards the balloon theory now.
It does sound like, but a balloon would have run out of air.
Over 200 years.
Over a couple of centuries.
In 103 years, yeah.
Mm. So someone's going to be refilling this dog.
Yeah, good point. You mean it's a conspiracy of dog balloon helium fillers.
Who could it be? Bearing in mind that there is a nearby inn named after the ghost. Who would have an incentive to keep this story alive?
The B&B.
It's the B&B.
Yes. At nights you can hear the noise of kss, shh, 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 and sort of squeaking.
Stop, you're letting it out. Keep your mouth closed.
Wait, Alice, whoa. Are you inflating an actual dog?
I may have inflated a living dog there.
Oh, not for long. Oh, dear.
Obviously, over several centuries, we're going to get through a lot of dogs.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's not going to be the same one.
This is like a much funner Hound of the Baskervilles, isn't it?
Yeah. A fun Hound of the Baskervilles. It doesn't fly in the Hound of the Baskervilles, does it? It does glow.
It just glows because in that one, they simply get a dog and paint it, whereas...
I've never... been satisfied with that part of the solution, because there's a glowing dog on the moors, and the solution to it was a dog, and we just painted it with magic paint that makes dogs glow. Which, that isn't a thing. You can't invent that in the solution.
They got through a number of dogs because the glowing paint was highly toxic. They painted it with will-o'-the-wisps.
What we actually did was we took a dog and we covered it with ghosts. Absolutely plastered ghosts onto the dog to make it glow. Dogs love to roll in a ghost, don't they, when they're out
about? Oh, they do.
He's like, come on, come on. Oh, he's rolled in a ghost.
He's got a ghost all over him. Not again. Is that what white dog poo is? Is it a ghost of dog poo?
This episode has checked off some of our classic subjects to return to. White dog poo and Back to the Future in one episode? Yes, and many times.
And a Christopher Nolan-inspired time mess-up-y thing. Yeah, so there you go. Again, I'm going to keep saying it. There you go. That's the story.
Thank you. Thank
you. Are you ready to score?
Yes, yeah. Like someone staying at a B&B might score the B&B. I will.
Oh, good. Oh, highly, please.
Well, it might be high, or I could be a bad person. I might score it low.
Okay, first up, then, names.
Names. Well, I like Black Dog.
Good. Do you like Ian Topham?
I do, actually. Now, Ian is not a particularly jazzy forename.
Mm.
But somehow, the combination of Ian and Topham. Ian Topham.
Topham, Ian. Edwin Sidney.
Edwin Sidney. Lovely.
Theo Brown.
Lovely name. You can see him, can't you? Edwin Sidney. You can just... He's another round spectacles...
Who wrote English Fairy and Other Folk Tales.
Yes, his sort of lacquered hair.
Mm.
Dainty handwriting. You can see the guy. Yes, great.
Absolutely.
Name.
Absolutely. He's turning up evocative. On a bicycle to collect these stories.
Did he really go around on a bicycle, or did you just make that up?
No, that's what I'm picturing.
Okay, yeah. Maybe even a penny farthing.
Oof.
I imagine his shoes curled up at the toe.
Oh, yeah.
Are those Mr. Sidney's shoes? Of course they are. Don't you recognise the toes? These shoes belong to Mr. Edwin Sidney.
Theo Brown?
Yeah, bad, bad Theo Brown.
She's got a good name. Yep, yep, yep. The baddest folklorist in the whole darn town or county.
Well, in the Exeter Theology Department.
Yeah, yes. The baddest honorary doctorate, honorary research fellow. She was a member of the Psychical Research Society. Is that different to the Society of Psychical Research?
It's got to be the... Oh, no. We could be in a ghost club.
Hey, you'd think it would be the same, but we could be in a real ghost club situation. The real ghost club busters.
Something tells me it would attract similar personalities.
Could be an offshoot.
Well, I think those are really good names, but there's just not that many of them. So I think it's like a really good three.
It is a good three, isn't it?
It's like it's a high three.
All right.
It's not Topham, but it is
Dog Lane. Dog Lane.
I mean, that's quite a bad name.
I wouldn't. It sounds smelly. Right. Okay. Then. So, second category: supernatural.
Supernatural.
Boom.
James, you opened with a floating dog.
Yeah.
And then you freeze framed on the dog, and the dog said. I guess you're wondering how I got here. As far back as I can remember, I wanted to be inflated and floated across.
I wanted to float at eye level between two hedges.
No, it's got to be high for supernatural.
It walked past that lady giving off a cold, dank feeling. It was a black dog, a black shaggy dog with fiery eyes.
And there's so many sightings of it. It appeared at the fireside for months on end, you told me.
Months on end. It was just chilling by the fire. And then there was the sort of the magical money raining down from the sky.
I'm not sure why the dog chose to reward the man for chasing it through the entire house with a poker.
I don't know.
Not sure what the moral of that story is.
Mm.
But just sometimes these things happen.
Well, maybe we'll get to that in our later in our later categories. Oh, by the way, I'm sorry. There was also a rumour that it brings death to humans that see it.
Oh.
And it causes non-ghost dogs to disappear.
What?
Yeah.
A dog that makes other dogs vanish?
Yes. It's like an anti-dog.
Not die, but just vanish.
Disappear, yeah. Whoop, you're just left holding a lead like an absolute mug.
Oh, that'd be horrible. People really like their dogs. Although, if this dog is being sighted and dogs are disappearing, it really does add credence to my inflating numerous real dog hypothesis. Because the supply, where are they coming from? Oh, local dogs vanishing. Meanwhile, dogs full of helium floating past tourists. Mm? I don't know, just asking questions.
You are just asking the questions. I think what does a dog love to do more than chase a balloon? Chase a dog-shaped balloon. You never notice balloons. They're not warm, are they?
No.
They're cold and damp.
Yeah,
because of the bits of spit in them.
I think pressure, maybe.
Yeah.
Once you've eliminated the impossible...
Go on.
Whatever remains, no matter how improbable, even if it is the inflating of living dogs with helium for marketing purposes, must be the truth.
Yep. Not just one person. It's like a long family line of people inflating a long family line of dogs.
It's a family tradition. This is how we do things here on the cusp of Dorset and next Dorset. It's always been this way. Now inflate your dogs or there'll be no dinner for ye.
Such is the Devonshire and Dorsetshire way. We're in no man's land here.
Them city folk in Exeter wouldn't understand. As long as you're under my roof, which has a small hole in it, you will inflate dogs and like it.
And if I'm honest, that small hole is problematic as I am inflating, I am using helium to inflate dogs. Some of them are getting out.
I'm torn now because I was about to say it was a 5 out of 5, but now I think it is definitely a long-running helium-based scam.
Oh, no.
So I'm just going to knock one off for that and call it 4.
Forget it, Jake. It's upline. okay, then.
Sorry, I'm sorry, James. You talked yourself out of that by going along with an extended helium dog riff.
It was a good one, though. I mean, come on. What a lovely riff. Okay, then, my next category is rich with metaphor. Because, until you brought the helium dog riff, it was quite a deep metaphor. Because don't people... Well, Winston Churchill be quite famously referred to his depression as a black dog. And this farmer, it seems, is all on his own in that farmhouse. All he has for company. Yeah. Every night he sits down in his chair and the black dog... comes there.
Yeah, lopes in.
Yeah.
Sits down. Yeah.
People start bullying him about it, saying, just get on, give us a smile, as in chase the dog away. Just simply chase the dog away. Simply stop being upset.
It's not that simple, James.
Or depressed. It isn't that simple as picking up a poker and chasing the physical manifestation of your depression into the loft and finding...
And immediately receiving a box full of money.
Yeah, and turning your life around, starting your dream career as a pub landlord that inflates dogs, it turns out. This ruined my metaphor.
Breaks down a little bit towards the
end. Yes, it ruins my metaphor, this bit that I'm definitely committing to.
It was a great, sad, serious metaphor up until that
point. It was, until you started bringing
in important points.
A long line of farmers / landlords inflating a long line of dogs. Over years, I mean a long line of dogs, but they probably also did a physical long line of dogs, because you would. So that was the rich with metaphor thing.
That's really good. And he actually became rich.
He did actually become rich.
So that's clever wordplay as well.
That was unintentionally clever wordplay, because it slightly bleeds into the next category by accident.
Well, in this age of having a better understanding of mental health,
mm-hmm.
I can't not give it 5, can I?
Yes.
Without looking callous.
Yeah, and let's not look too deeply at this metaphor. Much like a Christopher Nolan film, probably doesn't stand up to
scrutiny.
And if you did look at it hard and think about it, it'd probably be a bit sad. Probably make you feel a bit sad. Right, okay, final category. Cash in the Attic.
Oh, very good.
Which actually...
Did we use that category when there was the dog in the attic?
Maybe we did.
If not, we should have.
Yes.
It was very many, many years ago now.
It was. That was like series one or two.
I'm going to say...
Before you give your judgment, there is obviously the literal bit where he hits the attic and Cash appears, rains down on him. There's also the Cash cow that is inflating a number of dogs with helium and using them as marketing for your inn/B&B/tea rooms. I'd like to point out we are not accusing any of the current people that run any B&Bs of inflating actual dogs with helium.
Nor are we saying they don't do that.
Okay.
That's for the courts to decide.
Yes, we do need to give a balanced viewpoint.
As a category, I don't respect it.
Mm.
As a TV show format, I don't respect it.
Well, I don't let the TV show format trouble you with this.
It's too late. I'm troubled. Nonetheless, it's got to be 5 out of 5 for Cash in the Attic, because a guy found a lot of cash in his attic.
A lot of cash from Charles the First era.
Yeah,
it's pointed out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I didn't realise I'd done that pun with the rich in metaphor thing.
I
didn't realise I'd done that.
You double dipped a little bit, James.
I feel like I've doubled. Yeah,
you've double dipped.
Yeah,
to some extent, I think these scores have been inflated.
Yeah,
much like a line of dogs.
Much like a living dog.
Much like a series of alive dogs. Have been inflated. Or not, we don't know.
Or not, or they definitely haven't.
You decide. But it has happened.
A lovely story, and only slightly undermined by the idea of inflatable dogs.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, thank you very much for listening, everybody.
Thank
you, Joe, for editing this week.
Cheers, Joe.
If you would like a bonus material, ad-free feed, and access to the Lawfolk Discord, please join us on patreon.com/lawmenpod. Join us. One of us.
What county boundary is this?
This is the second episode in recent times where that's involved forcing air into a dog. We had the last post played on a beagle.
Look, I don't pick them. You keep bringing me these stories.
It's like that when, you know, when you've got a hammer, everything's looks like a nail or whatever.
Yeah.
But with putting air into dogs.
You've got a pump with an appropriately shaped nozzle.
With a dog nozzle.
Every dog looks insufficiently inflated.
Every dog looks under-pumped.